Okay, yes, so this is a different perspective, perhaps about thinking about improving efficiency of many parameters in our agroecosystems. And this is a project that's funded by multiple institutions. I want to acknowledge ARS and the Northeast SARE program in addition to my institution, Penn State. And I particularly want to emphasize that this is an interdisciplinary project with a collaborative effort of people from many disciplines, faculty, extension educators, many graduate students and undergraduate research technicians and technical support, and very much a team effort over the years. So many farms today are facing the reality of needing to protect water quality, and particularly in the Chesapeake Bay watershed, our farms are subject to increasing regulation. And so one of our goals in this project is to really understand some strategies to protect local and regional watersheds by reducing sediment and nutrient loss and pesticide use. And the typical Pennsylvania Northeast dairy farm tends to produce all of their forage crops, typically corn silage and alfalfa. And we're looking at an average-sized Pennsylvania dairy farm, about 65 milking cows. And then they import their feed crops, their grains, and fertilizers to optimize the ration for milk production. And so that makes the farm vulnerable to fluctuations in feed costs and milk prices. And we've seen that over the life of the project. Milk prices tend to fluctuate every 3 to 4 years. When we were designing the project first in 2009, let's see if I can get this mouse. The cursor, whoops, that didn't work. Sorry. Well, when we were designing the project in 2009, the blue line is the milk price, which was very low, and soybean price, which is green here, was high, and that occurred again in 2012, a low milk price, and feed prices, especially for soybean meal, were high. And so one of our goals is to reduce the economic vulnerability to fluctuations in feed costs and fuel costs and milk price. And so our project is designed to produce all of the feed and forage and some of the tractor fuel while minimizing these off-farm inputs and the environmental impacts. And we started the project with farm-scale equipment in 2010. You can see every crop entry, which are represented here as these quarter acre or tenth of a hectare squares, are present. They're planted every year. Every phase of our crop rotations are planted, and they're replicated 4 times. And so at the Agronomy Research Farm at Penn State, which is located in central Pennsylvania, we are simulating these dairy production systems at 1/20th the scale of an average dairy in Pennsylvania, which is about 97 hectares or 240 acres. So we're doing this at about at on 4.9 hectares. On a channery silt loam that are moderately to well-drained soils. And we also have some lysimeter plots that you can see there in the left upper corner where we can monitor environmental impacts from runoff and leaching. And we can't afford to have a dairy herd also in addition to the field cropping system, so we actually have a virtual dairy herd. The dairy scientist in the project is simulating milk production and manure production. And so we use only the amount of manure that these 65 milking cows produce in our cropping systems. And we harvest all the crops and simulate producing corn silage in the lab and roasting soybeans in the lab and alfalfa silage. We get all of those analyzed for forage quality. And then we give the dairy scientist the forage quality, the feed quality, the yield. And she designs rations to feed the dairy, the virtual dairy herd, and uses dairy nutrition models to predict milk production. She also uses the Penn State Dairy Research herd, so their herd and their seasonal fluctuations over the growing season, and mimics that herd seasonal fluctuations with our virtual herd. So it's mimicking, for instance, reduced milk production in the summer. So our systems are no-till with cover crops and double-cropped winter annual crops to optimize the solar capture and production of the system, and also that's representative of Pennsylvania field crops. The National Ag Statistics showed last year that 67% of field crops were no-till planted and many more with conservation tillage. And this also gives us an opportunity to utilize manure. So dairy farms usually have enough storage for about 6 months of manure storage, and they need to then spread their manure in the spring and again in the fall. And that can be a water quality problem if the nutrients are lost. But if we plant cover crops and winter annuals, that's an opportunity to capture that manure and actually grow more forage. And it's actually more appropriate feed quality for maintenance animals like dry cows and heifers, which you don't want to feed too much protein to because then they have to excrete more nitrogen in their manure, adding to the nutrient management problem. And this also gives us other soil health, soil conservation benefits. So we actually have a poster this afternoon. Rachel Moiron is doing work on optimizing the management of these systems with manure. That's later this afternoon if you're interested. And we're also using other strategies to provide continuous cover, so continuous solar capture and nutrient use efficiency, and strategies to interrupt crop life cycles and integrate legumes. So for instance, we're using the Penn State interseeder that was designed to interseed corn grain at the time with the same piece of equipment that side dresses nitrogen and could apply post-emergent herbicide. We're planting 3 rows of interseeded annual ryegrass and cover crops, clovers. And then we're double cropping that rye silage after, still going to see if I can use this cursor. After corn silage with sorghum Sudan grass and a green manure crimson clover crop that you see there. And then we've added another crop rotation that integrates winter canola that's planted and used as an oil crop. So we press the canola for oil and it goes into a straight vegetable oil tractor. It does not need to be converted to biodiesel. And the meal is a high protein source that's used in the dairy ration, similar to soybean meal. And we also have soybeans integrated here with rye cover crop before and after. So we have increased crop diversity, opportunities also to provide beneficial habitat for beneficial insects with cover and perennials in both of these rotations. And we're using integrated pest management to manage our insect pests. So we now have this scaled up to the 97 hectares to produce all of these feed crops. But there are some challenges with no-till systems. So for instance, you can't incorporate manure if you can't use tillage. And so the standard practice is to surface apply manure, which makes it vulnerable to volatilization of nitrogen and phosphorus runoff. And so we're using shallow disk injection, which in this part of the country is a new practice. It's similar to a no-till drill. Manure is placed into a slit about 4 inches deep. We're doing it at the 76 centimeter or 30 inch corn row spacing. And we are comparing the standard surface application to this manure injection approach. And so we have all of those quarter acre or tenth of a hectare plots divided into a split plot treatment. And over the life of the 6-year rotation that you see here that we call the manure rotation, we're comparing surface application to manure before planting corn and rye silage compared to on this picture here you see on the upper side, injecting the manure every time manure is applied. So we can look at the long-term impact of these two different manure management approaches. The other challenge of no-till, as I'm sure you're all familiar with, is that we tend to rely then on herbicides to terminate those perennials and cover crops, and so we have more herbicide resistance. We are seeing that in our region, particularly with the continuous use of glyphosate, glyphosate-resistant weeds, and there's the high potential for water quality and other ecosystem pollution problems. So we're also looking at, in the other rotation, a different set of practices, strategies to reduce herbicide use. And it varies with the crop. We're using, for instance, rye as a suppressive mulch to suppress weeds. In the corn and soybean crops, we're zone applying the herbicide just over the crop row, and then we come back in between the rows and cultivate twice with a high residue cultivator. In the alfalfa at establishment, we combine annual companion crops like triticale, peas, or oats. And at one time in the 6-year rotation here, to avoid using an herbicide, we actually plow to terminate the alfalfa or alfalfa and orchard grass in this case. So there is one plow event in the reduced herbicide strategy. And then both of these diverse crop rotations ideally protect and provide habitat to conserve beneficial insects. And we're using other practices to protect them. So we're not using seed insecticides. We're not using BT in the corn. We're not using preemptive insecticide spray at planting. And for a contrast or a comparison, we don't need this corn-soybean rotation in this farm, but for research comparisons, we have a corn-soybean rotation where we use all the preemptive insecticide approaches, triple stack BT corn, seed insecticides, insecticide spraying, et cetera. We're monitoring many things, the cropping system performance. I can only share some of them today, but for instance, there's a poster that was presented if you're interested in nitrous oxide emissions earlier that you could take a look at. And fortunately, we've experienced a range of weather conditions over the first 6 years of this project. We've had some wet springs and falls, which have been ideal for slugs, which are the major pests in no-till mid-Atlantic cropping systems. And so we've been able to monitor and manage and learn how to manage for those. We've had some dry summers, particularly 2012. We call that our drought year, but I know that's nothing compared to what it was in the Midwest. And we've had a range of weather, weather temperature conditions. As many of you have experienced the very extreme cold winters recently, that's been a real test to some of our canola and cover crops. And we've had some warm springs that have also sort of promoted bolting early season growth of and flowering of canola that we've seen some reduction in yields. So we have been able to modify after 3 years of seeing what happened with drought and some of these conditions. After 3 years, we made some changes to our cropping system. We had been growing wheat primarily to evaluate some green manure strategies and grow straw and sell the grain. We had canola in both rotations. We now only have canola in one rotation. We've replaced the wheat and canola with coarse silage, double crop with rye silage, followed by sorghum, Sudan grass, and a green manure. And in the manure rotation, the yields have not differed between these two manure management strategies, neither in the first 3 years or in the second 3 years, with the exception of rye silage, where we had top dressed the broadcast manure rye silage and not the inject manures. But really, all across all of these crops for 6 years, there have been no yield differences. And we've been applying the same rate of manure on both sides of those treatments to inject or broadcast. And then we use the pre-side dress nitrate test to determine if we need to side dress nitrogen. And often we've needed to side dress nitrogen on the broadcast manure treatment, not the inject manure. On average, we've then been able to reduce inorganic nitrogen inputs by 33% with the inject manure treatment, or on average about 100 kilograms per hectare, or about 90 pounds per acre, and maintain the same yields. So we are helping to conserve nutrients, largely would have been lost through volatilization. In the runoff plots, we've also measured that this inject manure treatment has lower phosphorus losses, both overland and subsurface. And there's a poster about the hydrology of these plots later today if you're interested. In the herbicide system, where we're trying to reduce herbicide use, the amount of herbicide reduction varies with the crop, but on average, over the 6 years, we reduced herbicide use in the reduced herbicide system by about 42%. This is an example here from 2012. And I'm just going to show you some of the results of the corn-soybean system, where again, remember, we're zone applying herbicide over the rows, cultivating in between the rows twice, in between the rows. We have seen higher weed biomass in this reduced herbicide system, but the weed scientist tells me this really is not something to be very concerned about because it's well below the yield reduction level of 100 grams per meter squared, or on this log, weed biomass scale, that would be 9.2. So all of our weed biomass levels are well below that reduction level. And remember that we rotate after corn to a couple of years of alfalfa, which will also interrupt the annual weed life cycle. And the yields, the crop yields really have not differed across most of our crops. We did see lower yields in soybean in 2012. When we actually replanted the standard herbicide soybeans, we had some slug damage and establishment issues, but we did not replant them in the reduced herbicide. And this is an instance where solar radiation model really applies. Our soybeans in the standard herbicide are planted with a drill or on 15-inch row spacing or 19 centimeters, so they're more closely spaced than they are in the reduced herbicide system, where we have to be able to get in and cultivate in between those rows, so they're planted at 30-inch spacing or 76 centimeters. So there's also a population and an optimum plant density interaction there. We did see some differences in alfalfa that have to do with the annual companion, but not enough time to get into that. In 2015, recently, we again saw a soybean yield reduction. This time it was only 10%. Here we did not replant one treatment over the other, but there were lower yields in 2 years then out of the six in soybeans. We attribute most of the yield reduction, as I said, to lower plant populations. We didn't replant them in the reduced herbicide. A lot of this we attribute to high moisture with the high rye residue and slug herbivory and poor slit closure. We've now shifted to using a planter instead of a drill to establish our soybeans, and that seems to be helping. We also remember 2012 was our driest year, and we also think that's a challenge. We have a poster about rye and cover crop management for these kinds of cropping systems later this afternoon. I encourage you to check out. But we also think cultivating in between the rows increased soil drying, and the years where we saw lower yields were years with drier summers, and so that is something that would have, you know, to be addressed in dry years. So finally, I just want to tell you a little bit about our pest comparison, where we have been used comparing these IPM approaches and conserving predatory habitat versus preemptive pest control. And the entomologists have monitored a couple of the crops in particular, but using IPM. We have not seen much pest damage at all from European corn borer, for instance. Here you see the European corn borer levels were significantly below the threshold, and significantly by 2014 they were a tenth of the numbers in tunnels per plant. No yield reduction there. We had an army worm breakout once where we used a pheromone to disrupt the army worm and not harm beneficial insects. But that hasn't been problematic. What we have seen that's interesting is a difference in predation. And so they put these little, they sacrifice these little caterpillars on clay balls out in the fields, and those are sentinel prey to measure predation levels. In this data that you see here during the daytime, there are no differences in predation. But in the nighttime, when there's a lot of insect predation, you can see that the caterpillars survived much less, or there was much less survival in the diverse rotations, and many more that survived in that corn-soybean rotation that uses the insecticide at planting and seed insecticide. So we have measured higher levels of predation. We've seen this every single year, both in June and July, in the diverse rotations, higher predation, particularly at night. And we see similar corn yields. We actually see higher corn yields across these systems in the diverse rotations. In 3 out of 6 years, we had higher corn yields. And in the soybean system, we had similar corn yields and only lower yields in 2012, and that reduced herbicide treatment where we didn't replant the soybeans. So we're able to achieve comparable yields without all these insecticide and traded inputs. We've also compared the profitability as we scaled up these whole farm dairy systems, one being the injected manure reduced herbicide, these attempts to improve no-till performance, compared to the standard practices, the broadcast manure and the standard herbicide. And the dairy scientist and a dairy assessor with FinPAC has looked at this at a whole farm scale. I don't have time to present all this and explain all this, but they assumed that the dairy started in 2010 at the end of the first fall, bought cows, upgraded equipment and facilities, and they've compared the loans and the feed and what extra feed could be sold across these two systems. And the take home is that they're both profitable, and they've weathered the difficult low milk price year of 2012 and are very comparable in their profitability depending on how they're compared. So to summarize, I'd say that, as many of us know, multiple years and interdisciplinary research has really helped us to identify ways to improve the systems and evaluate how those modifications we've made are performing. And particularly when we look at how we've modified them in the last 3 years, they're doing very well. They're producing most of the feed and the forage and some of the tractor fuel. We're reducing inputs and input costs. It's contributing to the profitability. And we are conserving these ecosystem services such as predation and protecting water quality as many of us are working towards. So with that, I will finish, and I don't know if there's time for questions. We did present the energy analysis, and there's a paper about that if you want to take a look at that. I didn't have time to present that. Thanks.